Welcome to Vital Connections On Air, a podcast brought to you by University of Minnesota Extension's Center for Community Vitality that explores the trends and topics important to communities and leaders throughout Minnesota. My name is Christy Kalavig, Extension Educator for the Center for Community Vitality, and today we continue exploring Minnesota's workforce challenges as we learn about what is being done in West Central Minnesota to address the childcare issues that they are facing. I had the opportunity to visit with Greg Wagner, who is the Business and Economic Development Director for the West Central Initiative. Welcome to the podcast, Greg.
Thanks, Christy. Glad to be a part of it.
Tell us a little bit about the West Central Initiative Foundation, what communities you serve and what you do within the foundation.
Sure. Well, West Central Initiative is one of the six Minnesota Initiative Foundations that have been around for actually 31 years now. And we all have a respective region that we cover in Greater Minnesota. And West Central Initiative covers the nine counties in West Central Minnesota. So that's Becker, Clay, Douglas, Grant, Ottertail, Hope, Stevens, Traverse, and Wilkin counties.
And what is the main work that the initiative focuses on?
Sure. We really have three primary focuses in working with our communities, and that's kind of our tagline, is we provide resources for our communities to be successful. And those three focus areas, we work in economic development, community development, and philanthropy. And so we have some gap financing programs where we provide business loans to businesses that are located within our region. We have some grant programs for our local governments, for nonprofits, and then we assist communities or individuals in philanthropic pursuits, be it fundraising or setting up donor advised funds or a local community fund for a kind of a philanthropic project.
Today we're talking specifically about child care. Can you tell me what child care looks like in your area of the state? Are you seeing a shortage in childcare, or is there ample resources for families?
Sure. So whenever you mention the word workforce, either before or after that word comes shortage of childcare. And so it's a very well-known fact on the ground. I would even say at the statewide. And down in St. Paul, it's definitely a recognized challenge for Greater Minnesota and for our region as well. Is we are seeing a child care shortage actually at crisis proportions, and that is definitely having impacts on the workforce. Both having available workers not being able to take employment on because someone has to stay at home and take care of the kids. And even the childcare workforce, finding people in the childcare field is also another challenge that is impacting the workforce. The Center for Rural Policy and Development had put out a study, I think it was January or early 2017 or late 2016, called Rural Reality, the Child Care Shortage, it's the Quiet Crisis. And specific to West Central Initiative's region, we have a 22% shortfall in number of spaces needed to accommodate the number of children under six with both parents working. So it's not a looming crisis, it's here and now.
And so what are some of the things that are being done in West Central Minnesota to address that crisis?
One of the kind of aspects that all of the Minnesota Initiative foundations have in common is we all have early childhood focuses in some of our programming. And with that, we have very close relationships with both child care center directors, with the early childhood communities in our communities, and also with home-based child care providers as well through networks that they convene. And over the years, childcare has always been definitely a needed component to having a healthy and viable workforce. And so we've had programs that support childcare, both the center-based care and the home-based care. For a nonprofit childcare center, West Central Initiative has a grant program that provides a set amount of dollars per licensed slot that they create to help offset operating costs or pretty much any factor of running the business. It's pretty unregulated with what they can do with the funding. And then most recently, for home-based care or licensed home-based child care, West Central Initiative has always had a loan program where we've provided kind of startup financing for childcare in the home. You know, there's always associated licensing costs, be it buying toys and equipment, or fire safety improvements and egress windows and fencing. So we've always had a loan program that allowed a licensed provider to borrow up to $3,500, and then that was payable with a small interest rate as well. But what last spring we set revised the program slightly, where we set it the interest rate at 0%, and the loan became forgivable as long as they provide licensed care, and that kind of the forgiveness, how long the term of that forgiveness is based on how long they borrow. Or how much they borrow the money for.
And so is that made available through dollars just that your initiative, that your foundation raises, or is there some type of a match that you get from some other entity?
Yeah, so kind of the pilot year that we ran in 2016, we have a pocket of dollars set aside that is for our loan programs. And we took and set aside $70,000 of our own money to direct to that program. And so that was through that we were able to provide 20 forgivable loans. So that was 20 providers that were able to take advantage of that $70,000. And so we evaluated that program impact, and it was a very quick and simple way for us to maybe have some impact on both the new startup providers and existing providers, because they were both eligible for it. That kind of in tandem, the state of Minnesota through the Department of Employment and Economic Development last year had the Greater Minnesota Child Care Grant Program, where entities could apply for some of the funding they had set aside to help address the child care shortage in Greater Minnesota. So West Central Initiative applied for $50,000 through that program and matched it with another $51,000 of our own money to basically create another pot of money for the program to continue for one more year. So we were actually able to provide funding for 31 more licensed child cares, for licensed home-based child care, and just kind of wrapping up now, quote unquote, closing on those loans, where we go and have a little bit of paperwork to sign and then provide them a check for what they had outlined, what they wanted to use the funding for.
So what type of impacts have you seen in the communities by being able to offer this to providers? Are you seeing folks come forward that there was maybe a few small cost barriers that you're able to help alleviate, that now more spots are opening up in communities for childcare?
Yeah, especially with new providers, when they find out some of the licensing requirements of having to add some egress windows or fencing, you know, that became kind of restrictive in their ability to pursue that license financially. And so, you know, we had some very honest and candid conversations that were good for us to hear that, hey, you know, but for this program, we probably would not have been able to open up our childcare. And same conversations were really had with the existing providers that received the funding. Beyond the fact that they could, you know, kind of replace some of the old worn out toys and equipment, they made some safety improvements with new swing sets or fall protection around the swing set area or repairing fences. There's also some requirements that they had to meet based on licensure inspection that we were able to assist in offsetting some of those costs with. And there's kind of that the other benefit of having these providers recognize that they are valued and they provide an important role in communities. And this is just a program that can help go towards recognizing the value and the impact that they have by providing a small amount of funding to kind of re-energize their business.
Well, and I think it's great the way you phrased it, that they really are an asset to their community and that they have value to how strong that community is. When you look at the communities that are in your service area, how exactly does childcare, either having several childcare options in a community or having none, what do you see in those communities as far as the impact of childcare, either existing or not existing, on the families that live there?
Yeah, I hear a lot of stories, and just kind of even extending beyond the confines of our region, but that childcare is at such a premium that people will drive an hour out of the way. There's probably stories of people driving more than an hour out of the way to get their kids in childcare. You hear stories of, you know, that a certain provider doesn't have enough openings to take care of both siblings, and so they have to split the kids up into two different child cares. And you know, there's impacts to the kind of that family, that work-life balance, where you're driving an extra 2 hours to drop your kids off to be cared for. That's 2 hours away from the job. You're getting up earlier. You know, there's kind of that whole domino effect of impacts that even that extra 2 hours could have. And you know, having siblings separated, you know, those are just two quick examples. But I think it also brings on community stress when small businesses, which make up the most of our employers in the region, when they can't find employees to work, and you know, are covering shifts themselves as owners, and extra shifts and extra hours, and you know, having other employees run into having to stay longer and work longer hours as well, and the aging of our workforce as well. And you know, when you look at the healthcare workforce and needing to find childcare for those care providers and the nursing staff, that there's impacts everywhere, and so really, child care is a key linchpin in all that is workforce challenges.
And you mentioned the aging of workers. What are some other factors, in your opinion, that play into the shortage of child care in our communities?
Some of it is that balance in wages. I know that's, it's two-sided with wages. There's a lot of families that look at the cost of care. Is it more beneficial to stay home and take care of the kids, or am I just going to go work and essentially pay for the cost of childcare for taking care of my kids? And it's also, the wages also plays into, you know, what providers and both home-based and center-based can pay their employees or themselves. You know, that's one thing we definitely want to recognize and be sure to have people fully acknowledge that, be it home-based or center-based care, these are businesses, and there's time and effort and behind just the need to get paid as well. And so being able to make a livable wage either at center-based care or home-based care is an important factor as well.
Right. And it's a livable wage for those that are providing the care, and also making sure that the families that are needing the care are able to afford it. And so are you really seeing or hearing conversation about the need for quality childcare as well as affordable childcare, or is it, you know, one or the other in your area?
I think it's definitely has to be both in the conversation. It has to be quality and safe, but it also has to be affordable. So that, I think that equation makes this to be such a challenge, is because, you know, kids need to be safe and they need to have this structure, but it also needs to be affordable. But the providers also need to be able to charge enough to make money as well. So it's a very fine balance of being able to accommodate both of those factors.
And so with the loan program that you have, is that something that the foundation will be able to continue or expand in the near future?
We hope so. So when we ran it in 2016, it took a couple months for us to provide those 20 loans. And that was, you know, reflecting back, or at that time, that seemed like that was quite a high demand. The money went rapidly. When we launched the 2017 program in April, it took about 2 weeks for 31 applications to come in. And so the demand was even greater. I think part of it is got out a little bit more and people were ready for it. But that said, we're definitely evaluating how we can continue the program. I have a list, a contact list. We're not calling it a waiting list, but a contact list if we're able to get some more funding identified. And there's already another 20 people on the list of providers looking to take advantage of that, the funding program. So there's definitely the demand and the need. It's kind of but for the funding right now, and trying to identify some other resources to help capitalize this program again.
Having a contact list that long definitely shows how much a program like this is needed and the value in it. Have you had any businesses or communities come to you and say, we recognize that there is this need, what else can we do? Or is it kind of one group doing something here and another group tackling the issue in another way over here? Are you coming together regionally with folks?
We are definitely coming together regionally. The conversations are being driven regionally. You know, each community is different, but really, it's across the board. It's a challenge in every community, and we had recently conducted a study to look at what was available out there in the region, and actually all the Minnesota Initiative Foundations have done this study too, looking at childcare centers, what's out there, what they offer, what their rates are, what their employment looks like, you know, what's turnover. And so it's being evaluated at both the regional and, you know, greater Minnesota level. And as we talk to businesses and stakeholders and communities, everyone recognizes that it is a statewide issue. So it's becoming more of a regional conversation than ever before. And I think as it gets to be more and more of a need, because it'll probably become a greater need before it starts to get better, it's going to be more of a regional conversation, because no one community can handle this solo, I don't think. I think you need to look at examples of successes and you can implement those in other communities, but it is definitely a community conversation.
And so now that there's kind of been this light shed on the topic, or at least the conversations are happening more often, do you think that this issue will become better or perhaps even worse in the short term?
That's a very good question. If I only had that crystal ball, right?
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. You know, I think it's going to become more of a challenge. So it's going to get harder, because I think there's several factors playing into that. Is there's a lot of providers out there that are approaching retirement age, and so we're not getting the new startups, quote unquote, you know, the mm-hmm. new providers starting up to equal the ones that are retiring. And you know, we haven't even touched on the regulations and the rules revolving around that. You know, I think it's hard to argue when you've seen increased safety and, you know, decreased injuries and impact to the kids based on some of the new rules that have been implemented. But the more regulations and the more training that's required is going to probably turn some people away from the industry as well. So
it's a fine line to walk.
Yeah, there's benefits in the rules and regulations, but there's also the impacts of that being entirely too much of a load for providers to take on, in addition to caring for the kids. The reporting and all the extra education, you know, weighs into that already 10-hour day that they're putting in. So
what do you think are some long-term solutions to the issue?
I think one of the solutions, or you know, that's going to start having more buy-in is looking at how to subsidize childcare through the employers. If it's, you know, having communities, employers throw money in to help offset some of the costs to providers, or retain, having the employer buy a slot so they can market to prospective employees. And say, hey, you don't have to wait 2 years for a childcare slot. We're holding X amount of slots at this childcare. Might be an approach that I don't know, I've heard discussed out there, but I think there's going to be more private sector involvement to help address some of this. But that also needs to be coupled with programs like DEED ran last year through the state with the Greater Minnesota Child Care Grant Program, where they provided some funding for innovative approaches to providing quality care. So I think, you know, we're going to see some maybe good case studies and good pilot projects coming out of similar to what we did with different approaches. There was I believe, six organizations across Greater Minnesota that had, or six or eight that received that funding. So they're might be some learning from their results as well.
And trying to figure out how one project maybe worked well over here and how to implement that on in your area of the state, knowing the differences or challenges that exist in one place versus another.
Yeah, we can all learn from each other, and that's where that regional approach benefits, because instead of getting started and finding out that someone else had done it maybe a little smoother and better, if you have those conversations at the forefront and learn from those, you can connect with those parties and learn from what they did at the onset and save a lot of time, energy, and effort.
It's easy to move forward if you don't have to reinvent the wheel every time.
Exactly.
So you shared that you did a study looking at the daycare centers in your area. Were you surprised by what you saw in that study, or were you expecting the numbers that came in?
I don't think we were surprised. You know, we've used a couple times in this conversation, you know, that the fine line, and really what it quantified was, it's the fine line between charging enough to pay your employees a livable wage, but not charging too much so you drive parents away to somewhere else. So it's that balancing act of, you know, it's a business. They're, even if it's a nonprofit, they have to, you know, pay their employees. You can't pay them, you know, what a competitor is going to do, or you know, other industry. You're not going to have people in the childcare industry to take care of the kids. That really just, it quantified a lot of what we had suspected was the case.
And so do you take information like that back to legislators, or how do you use this information to kind of leverage the work that you're already doing to either bring in more dollars to open up more slots for the loan program, or start bigger initiatives?
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, we use that information to educate all of our stakeholders and partners, and that includes our legislative partners, that here's a resource with some pretty concrete numbers that can help inform decisions, because definitely the decisions at the legislative level have impacts. And so as long as they have that information, they can make the right decisions based on all the factors. So we hope that it's going to be used to help, you know, move that needle to solving this challenge, and we can move on to the next workforce challenge.
Well, and what would be the next workforce challenge?
So kind of, it's almost hand in hand with when you talk about workforce, and, you know, I had initially mentioned the aging of the workforce, and we talked quite a bit here about childcare, obviously, as the topic. Housing is another huge factor that's affecting greater Minnesota communities, and it's that available affordable housing, you know, that workforce housing that can be a lucrative way to keep your employees in the community, and the further they have to drive, you know, we talked about that too with the childcare, the impacts that commuting that we typically associate with metro areas, you know, that's becoming a reality in the greater Minnesota as well. So, and in some communities, it's the exact opposite. They have a kind of a surplus of housing that's, you know, some of it's getting blighted and run down, and there's different approaches you have to take in those communities to revitalize and hopefully be able to redevelop some of those. And so it's a balance, you know. Some communities, it's the solution is to construct more housing, and I think that is definitely part of the solution, but I think a big focus also needs to be on redevelopment of existing housing stock that's already there and maybe underutilized.
Thank you so much for taking some time out of your day, Greg, to visit with us about what the West Central Initiative Foundation is doing for childcare. Good luck as you continue your work, and hopefully you'll be able to open the program up to even more daycare owners in the future.
Thanks, Christy.
To learn more about the West Central Initiative, visit their website at wcif.org. There you will be able to find more information about the initiative's great work, as well as the loan program that Greg discussed during our conversation. Learn more about University of Minnesota Extension Center for Community Vitality at extension.umn.edu/community, and find more about today's topic on our Leadership and Civic Engagement alumni blog. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter to stay up to date on new research and resources for communities and those who lead them. Join us for our next episode, where we will explore another important workforce issue, housing. I would also like to take a minute to thank the great team of people who helped make this podcast possible. Thank you to Merritt Boussier for the music, Elise Hawkins for website development, Elise Paxton and Joyce Holting for editorial and social media support, as well as my great team of peer reviewers that include Holly Arp, Michael Darger, Brian Fredrickson, Beth Callistad, Neil Linscheid, Ryan Pesch, Bridget Tuck, and Ben Winchester, as well as all of the wonderful guests we have had in our first 6 months. We all hope that you are enjoying this podcast as much as we are in making it, and hope that you will share comments on our website and social media pages to let us know what you would like to hear about next. Thank you again for joining us for this episode of Vital Connections on Air.